Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. It's the 2 minute drill. It's brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. I got to get out to Family Leisure. Got the bar stools, got a high-top table I got there. Got to go pick it up. It is at Family Leisure. Great folks at Family Leisure, locally owned and operated. Dennis and his staff are absolutely awesome. I am going to warn you, be careful. You will want to walk away with the entire store. If Chiefs season has arrived, and that means get-togethers with family and friends to watch some Chiefs football, you need the ultimate man cave, the ultimate setup. It starts with some theater seating from Family Leisure, maybe a dartboard, maybe it's a pool table, poker table, you name it. Maybe it's an arcade game. Make sure the party keeps on rocking at your place with the ultimate man cave. It starts by getting to Family Leisure, K10 and Ridgeview. Great sale going on right now as well on the patio furniture. Beautiful time to get outside and enjoy that. They will take care of you the way they take care of me and my family. 2004, I bought my patio set. We've just added on to it, and don't even know which one's like 3 or 4 years old and which part's like 17 years old. It's the best patio furniture around, best selection. It's at K10 in Ridgeview at Family Leisure. Let's get the drill started right now in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Eitan Shander from Sports Map Radio and 1480 Fox Sports, The Gambler's up first. Eitan, how are you, sir?
I am well, Saran. Always a pleasure, my friend. Hope all is well with you.
All is good, and I assume all is well with Eagles fans, although I was told that the Eagles were the worst team in the NFL by some folks. Now, a 32-6 win, convincing win over the Falcons, certainly would kick dirt in that individual's face. However, the Jacksonville Jaguars did win their first game and then dropped 15 in a row.
Correct.
You tell me, is this team good, not good, bad, horrible? Great. What are they?
Well, I can tell you this. Without a doubt, Atlanta is the worst team in the NFL, and at least after 1 week. The Eagles are a good team. The Eagles are a football team that, for better or worse in this league, if you can come prepared and excited and intact with everybody on the same page, that may buy you a point or two when it's all said and done as far as not being as talented. But when you have all that and you're going up against a team like Atlanta, who looked like both sides of the ball didn't even practice this preseason, then you're going to look spectacular. So what does the regression to the mean, kind of like back to the middle, look like for the Eagles? I think it's going to look like what you saw for the most part against Atlanta: quick passes, RPO. Don't ask Jalen Hurts to throw the ball 35-plus times, and definitely not deep downfield. Kind of take what the defense gives you, but know that you've got athletes, especially at the quarterback position, that can break a tackle or two and really make the difference. So they're really good, I think, Seren, as far as like a short pass team and with Miles Sanders and Kenny Gainwell running the football. But can they beat top-tier teams? I don't necessarily think so yet.
Jalen Hurts, reports had Deshaun Watson being on the wish list for the Eagles. Is Jalen Hurts the guy? Is he Mr. Right or just Mr. Right now?
He's Mr. Right now, but that can change after this season, and I think he's got an inside track at it. But there are two things. One, they're both on the organization here. The Eagles and Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, he is just so fascinated by the next shiny toy. So if somebody gets in front of him and says, hey, you can trade for Watson, you could trade for Aaron Rodgers, then Jeffrey Lurie is going to entertain that. I know Deshaun came out and said he doesn't want to play in Philly. That's fine for now. But the other thing that really bothered me this entire offseason and really through the preseason was that there was no vocal commitment to Jalen Hurts. They didn't even have his picture up. They still had Carson Wentz's mural up there into the preseason. There was no real verbal commitment about Jalen Hurts, especially in a press conference or 10 when Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson's name would come up. It would have been nice to hear from the general manager or the head coach, yeah, we don't talk about players under contract, but Jalen's our guy. And we never even got that second part of it. So a lot of the speculation and a lot of the talk about Watson or Rodgers or anybody else that could be jammed into a trade, I think partly is the result of the organization not really coming out and definitively standing behind Hurts. He's got a shot to do that this year, though, and I think he will when it's all said and done.
Yeah, he can just grab it and take it. And by the way, you can discuss your own players that are under contract at any time, whenever you want. So the Eagles can feel free to do that.
Well, no, just not Rodgers or Watson was the point.
No. I know. But I mean, but to your point, I guess you could certainly talk about your own guy. You know, there's no problem with that. All right, tell me, Ben Simmons. You know, Deshaun Watson doesn't want to be in Philly. Neither does Ben Simmons. What's going to happen there ultimately?
This has been a fascinating back and forth that's been playing out publicly with reports left and right. But, you know, what's crazy about all of this is there's no substance. I mean, it's like the next Fast and Furious movie, right? A lot of blockbuster explosions and crazy guns going off and car chases. And these are these salacious reports that keep coming out. He's not showing up, or the Sixers won't take. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed except sides have got impatient, specifically Simmons. He doesn't want to be here. The Sixers don't want him to be here. But I think what's going to happen when it's all said and done, as crazy as this sounds, is that Simmons will be here until maybe the first month or so passes in the season. He'll show up. He'll be the good soldier and know that that's the way to get him out. And the Sixers will praise and laud and everything that comes with him because they know that's the way to get him out. And then, I don't know, a year or so, when it's all said and done and wrapped up, you and I will have a conversation, God willing, and it'll be about all the things that Simmons hated and how the Sixers put up with all this stuff. But for now, I think everybody's walking on eggshells because nobody wants to be the side that comes out with a report about what's happening or happened that could damage any type of trade. I think this is all about just don't move, don't risk breaking anything, dropping anything. Just sit there until the trade goes through, and then you can write your tell-all. But, yeah, to your point about the question initially, neither side wants the other side to be involved in what they're doing.
Philadelphia Phillies still in the mix, even though an unimpressive 74-72, just 2.5 games out. A logjam of teams to deal with. Are they good enough to get hot here over the last couple of weeks of the season?
I knew that I couldn't filibuster long enough with that Simmons answer for you to not bring this squad up. It's hilarious. I love you, Sered, for it. Here's the thing. They're here. They're hanging. And they're even a couple of games out in that second wild card. They're four back in the loss column. They're here. And Bryce Harper, I think, is the biggest storyline across the board where he has actually entered the conversation of not just winning the MVP, but what I didn't think was possible at all, winning an MVP without even making the playoffs. Now, the thing about the team itself, their defense has improved from last year and really the start of the year, but the bullpen is horrific, and their starting pitching has not been anywhere near consistent. So if you can get 14, 15, 17 runs in a baseball game, you're going to look pretty good. But when it comes down to playing a little bit better team, and I know that their schedule is somewhat favorable, they're just not that good of a baseball team as a whole. But I don't want to overstate or really just not mention the job that Bryce Harper has done. This guy, the season he's having, is appealing to like the old school baseball heads, the analytics, anything and everything in between. Harper is a monster this year. But you know where I stand on this team. They're going to fall short.
Eitan
is going to be there undoing.
Yeah, Eitan Shander in Philadelphia. Great stuff as always, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too, my friend. Go Chiefs. All the way
from San Francisco. Damn right, go Chiefs. Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, ESPN, Westwood One, Home Shopping Network, Lifetime, San Francisco, California. Roxy Bernstein, how are you, my friend?
Hi, pal. How you doing, Sered?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Are the 49ers doing great? Do we think that this is the team that's ready to rule the roost again in the NFC?
Well, they certainly believe it is. And, you know, another test coming up Sunday in Philly after they escape. It's the last team, that game they had it well in hand. Then all of a sudden, you're looking up and you're getting a little nervous and you're chewing on your fingernails a little bit toward the end of that one. But they took some lumps, got some key injuries in that game, but this is a team that's really confident, and as long as they can keep the core of this team healthy, they feel they'll be right there with a chance to win not just the NFC West, but win the NFC and go to the Super Bowl.
Mike Shanahan, every year, would kill fantasy football players. Orlandis Gary would rush for 1,000. Everybody get him. Mike Anderson would be the guy. Right? Just back after back. After Terrell Davis was gone, it was just a different back every year, piling it up. I know injuries played a role in this, but Sermon was supposed to be the guy, the rookie third rounder out of OU, according to fantasy prognosticators. And I know Mostert going down is what opened the door for Elijah Mitchell, but Sermon was inactive and Mitchell wasn't. So that does speak to the sixth rounder being in front of the third rounder. Did you have any inkling that Elijah Mitchell could be 100-yard back in a game and that he would be the next guy up?
I don't know necessarily, Seren, if I saw 100-yard back, but I knew he had moved ahead of Sermon on the depth chart, that he was really well-liked by this coaching staff. They felt he was picking up the offense and understanding of what Kyle Shanahan wants faster than Trey Sermon was. So I had an inkling that he had moved up behind Raheem Mostert to be the number two back, but I don't think anybody anticipated the performance they got from Mitchell, and now they're going to need it, you know, pretty consistently considering Mostert's out for a while.
Yeah.
So Mitchell all of a sudden moves. He moves from being just a guy on the depth chart now to being a really important player for the San Francisco 49ers.
Debo Samuel explodes 189 yards and a touchdown. There was kind of a feeling 2 years ago coming down the stretch run, like this is the guy he could be. It never materialized last year. Does he break out and become a Pro Bowl caliber wideout this year?
He's got to stay and he hasn't shown he can do it. And that's the big problem with Debo. He has all the physical traits. I mean, you look at him and DK Metcalf, and those two are just freaks. But the problem for the Niners is that Debo's been unable to stay healthy and stay on the field consistently. That's what's got to happen. If he's going to be a Pro Bowl-type guy, an all-NFL-type performer, he's got to stay healthy. And the other question with the Niners at receiver is, what's going on with Brandon Ayuk? Because it appears that he's, after a really nice year last year, but he's kind of fallen out of favor. There's been scuttlebutt about his practice habits. They don't feel that he is where they want him to be at this point. I think they try to light a fire under him. We'll see. Keep an eye on him the next few weeks because the Niners need him opposite Debo. He's showed flashes that he can be a real deep threat for this team.
A's just three back in the wild card. They took two out of three from the Royals. Do they have enough to catch, whether it's Boston, New York, Toronto, whoever it might be, do they have enough to get caught up and get that wild card spot?
I figure, Seren, they got to go 13-3. And I think it's going to be tough when you look at the schedule. They still have six with Houston. They still got to play a couple series against Seattle. They do have the Angels this week and caught a break because Ohtani was supposed to pitch tonight, but he is not pitching now because of soreness. So they catch a break there, but they've been their own worst enemy. Seren, if you look, they've blown significant leads. Like they did the Royals up 6-0 on Tuesday. They've done that now a number of times with these enormous leads they've let slip away. If they don't get there, they're their own worst enemy, and they've had a few key injuries or a suspension down the stretch. Ramon Laureano getting popped for performance enhancer. That cost them 80 games at a significant point. The horrific injury to Chris Bassett taking that line drive off the face. The bullpen has really faltered recently. I'd like to remain optimistic, but I'm not feeling great about their chances considering what they have to deal with these final few weeks.
Giants are still up a game on the Dodgers, although they've dropped a couple in a row. The Dodgers are making a run. We thought the Dodgers were going to take it and run away with it when they finally caught the Giants not long ago, but the Giants pushed back out in front, getting up, I think, maybe 3.5. Might have been the high water mark. This time now down to a game. Can they hold off the Dodgers?
Well, we didn't think they'd be in this position to begin with, right, Seren?
Yeah.
So why not be able to hold them off? Now, they do still have two more series with the Padres, even after losing 2 out of 3 to San Diego. That they have a tougher schedule the rest of the way that the Dodgers do, and they have no head-to-head matchups, which is key. So, but for the Giants, I think at this point, why can't they hold them off? Now, L.A., you look at them on paper, the Dodgers are clearly the better team. But there's something about this Giants team, and they just keep winning ball games. Okay, they just lost this series, but it's going to be a fun 2.5 weeks to the finish line to see what happens. And look, I didn't think they'd be in this position, so why can't they hold them off?
We will find out. Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Great stuff, buddy. Have a great weekend.
You too, Seren. Take care.
Welcome to LA.
Pete Fox, Los Angeles, California. Get ready for your your final words to be stepped on, Pete.
I didn't know he was going to go with the take care.
That's why
I love Roxy.
That's why I have a hand up there ready to point. Wait till the point.
Don't tell me how to do my job.
There's a process here to this. We're not adhering to it here today. Pete, besides our squabbles here in the studio, Los Angeles, California, KLOS. Pete, how are you, sir?
Hey, everything's good.
USC, looking for a head coach. Why make the move now? I mean, if you were one bad showing away from firing your coach, shouldn't you have come to that conclusion at the end of last season?
Yeah, you would think. Yeah, I mean, this has kind of been one of those things bubbling around for quite a few years now. Every time, there were strong rumors. I mean, you've asked me multiple times, how hot is the seat? And I'd always say, it's not terribly hot. They've extended his contract and they paid him a lot of money. Where is he going to go? And then, they reel off a couple of decent wins and have a pretty good season. And you think, all right, next year's the year. And then, the same kind of thing would happen. And I think they just had enough of that, especially losing to a garbage Stanford team. They kind of felt like, well, it's time and we'll eat that money. We'll move on. So now we wait and see what's next. And, you can ask me this question three or four more times and I'll say we'll have to wait and see. What I've heard is that it's about a three-month process. They're not going to rush through this. They like Dante Williams. He will not be the coach, more than likely. They will work hard to keep him on the staff because he's a great recruiter and they need that. But here's the list, if you want the list, as to who the names are that are out there. Mario Cristobal seems to be atop the list, the Oregon head coach. But again, I don't know why they would be after him all that excitedly. Another name that's been coming up for years is Eric Bieniemy. Obviously, you guys know him, and Mike Bone knows him, has hired him before as an offensive coordinator. Mike Bone's affiliation with Luke Fickell at Cincinnati is another name that people have mentioned a lot, that they have, thrown out the proverbial give him whatever he wants kind of thing. Chris Peterson is a name that's been coming up for years as well. I think they either hired Sark instead of him or maybe Kiffin, I can't remember. He's retired now, so he's available, and I think that would be good. I don't know. James Franklin is another name that they've been throwing around quite a bit. So that's an abbreviated list. There's a few more that are out there that I'm like, those guys are not even worth mentioning. But these are kind of, to me, the hot guys.
Well, let me throw one more out there, and it's Bob Stoops, and he and Peterson, guys that aren't doing anything, are guys that could step in and get a jump on things right now. They're available right this moment. How hot is Bob Stoops' name?
You're right. That was on my list, and I just missed it. Thank you for pointing out stupidity. that's a great one. No, that's fantastic. I think he would be really great for the job. Doesn't he feel like one of those guys that left his last job a little too early, kind of scratching your head? I mean, Urban Meyer's on the list as well. He's got a job. I mean, that's a name that's been thrown out for a long time. Like, you plug Urban Meyer in, you're automatically a winner. Urban has gone on record saying, I am not leaving Jacksonville. This is my job, et cetera, et cetera. But Bob Stoops, I mean, I feel like he's still got coaching gas in the tank the way Urban Meyer did before going back to Ohio State. So that would be fantastic. So there's a lot of availability out there, unlike in the past when, they stumble into guys that are like, okay, I guess. And, the USC affiliation thing is always something that they have to pay attention to. And I think maybe now they don't have that drive as much anymore. Like, they don't have to go hire a guy that used to play there or used to coach there or something. I think they just want to get a good football coach.
Andy Reid has always been about promoting his assistants, at least for head coaching jobs. I believe he'd give Eric Bieniemy a great going away party if he wanted to take the job and walk right now. How popular a hire would Eric Bieniemy's name be?
I think extremely. Although he does have UCLA ties, I think people have known about this guy for a long time around the NFL and around the college ranks. So he's one of those guys that's been overlooked for a while. So I feel like it would be a very popular move.
Shohei Ohtani shut down from the pitching, it looks like. Any concern that that's more than just done for this year, that there could be problems moving forward?
What team does he play for again? Oh, the Angels. That's right. They're still playing, right?
Yeah.
No, not really. I mean, he's dealt with the arm issues before, and I think the fact that they're out of it and not a contender and just trying to play this one safe, you don't want him to have to deal with those kind of arm injuries again. And they got nothing to lose by sitting him down. I mean, I think it's funny when the scroll comes across the TV that says, Mike Trout will probably not play for the rest of the season. I'm like, is there anything more obvious than that, that he won't play for the rest of the season? So I think Shohei Ohtani is right there in that same basket. Like, why would you waste him? Why would you even run the risk of him re-injuring his arm when they're out of it the way they have been for quite a while now?
Yeah, and the Dodgers red hot. They've won six in a row and look like they're reeling in the Giants. We'll see if they get that done. The Rams breakout. Didn't really know what we were going to get, right, because didn't see Matt Stafford in the preseason, but a glowing performance against the Bears. So how high is Los Angeles on the Rams, and how high do you think the chances are that they are the best team in the NFC?
I think everyone is extremely high and very excited and, you know, feel like this is a Lombardi trophy in their hands already after one game to start the season. So I'm not quite that hot on this team right now. I mean, they're good. And the reason I'm not is because what you just mentioned is that this division is really, really good. And any one of these teams could win it. I mean, even the Cardinals. I mean, you wouldn't be the least bit surprised if the Cardinals won that division. So there's four really good teams. I don't know if four teams have ever made the playoffs from one division before. I don't even know if that's possible. I know three have, but I don't know about four. But it seems like it could be possible because this is four really good teams, and they're just going to beat each other up all season. So that right there makes it hard for any one of them, I think, to be a runaway winner of this division. So I think Matt Stafford was fantastic. I think the Rams looked very good. They did all the things you would want. That game wasn't even close. Big plays. They ran the ball well. The defense put pressure on the Bears. It was a, you know, a comprehensive win, as you would say. And so consequently, yeah, the Ram fans are extremely fired up here in LA after 1 week. So we'll see how they feel after the Colts. You know, probably another win for them, not a terribly good team in Indianapolis. But week three, it's the Buccaneers, and that's going to be a real test.
Pete Fox, get your finger away from that button, Jed. Pete Fox in Los Angeles, KLOS. Always great talking to you, Pete. We always appreciate the time. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
And you too, man. Thanks.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was covering the Chiefs the day Patrick Mahomes was born. He was covering the Chiefs the day Mahomes brought the Lombardi Trophy back to Kansas City.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime.
He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Seren Petro with you. Let's talk some Chiefs football. Adam Teicher from ESPN joins us. He's brought to you by Twin Peaks, the best place to go watch your Chiefs football. Sunday Night Football, the party will be on at Twin Peaks. TVs everywhere, and of course, you can set up shop early. They've got the Sunday ticket. ESPN Plus, so all your college and pro football is on at Twin Peaks, plus the home of the 29-degree draft beer. Grab you a man-sized draft beer. Get to Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks. Never settle. Mr. Teicher, sir, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very good. Chiefs are 1-0. Big win against what might be the second best team in the AFC. Let's start there. The Ravens are a feared team. The Buffalo Bills are a feared team. But both of them fall, and not in nearly the kind of impressive fashion that the Cleveland Browns fell. I think the Cleveland Browns probably earned more street cred from this loss than they did a lot of their wins in the past. Do you believe that the Chiefs just knocked off their biggest rival?
No, I think you can put the Chiefs, Bills, and Browns in a, you know, in their own group up at the top three up there. So, yeah, I do. I think you know, there's a good chance that come January, this game will have some seeding ramifications, maybe the first seed. So, yeah, I do think the Browns are for real, and they'll recover from this and go on to have a nice season and win their division. And I'm certainly anticipating a Chiefs-Browns playoff game sometime down the road, too.
Yeah, it does look that way. Some warts maybe exposed for the Kansas City Chiefs in this one. What was the biggest takeaway from a they got to go to work on this standpoint?
Yeah, the pass rush, you know, you take Chris Jones out of it, and what do you have right now? You know, you have pretty much nothing. And, you know, fortunately for the Chiefs, they're not taking Chris Jones out of it. So, you know, there's at least that. But somebody's going to have to emerge. Somebody, whether it's Frank Clark coming back or somebody, Jaron Reed, whatever the Chiefs might do there, is going to have to provide some more help for Chris Jones, because that's, I think, job one. I can't see the Chiefs getting where they want to go defensively with the kind of pass rush they showed the other day. You know, the other thing is the offensive line, and probably a little, you know, it's unrealistic to expect it to be a lot better than it was on Sunday this early, you know, when they're still just kind of getting out of the box here. But, you know, Orlando Brown, not good, not even close to good enough. And, you know, that's going to have to improve certainly for the Chiefs to get to where they want to go. So those are the two things that are really on my list right now.
I was on Sunday Sound Off with Mick Schaefer on 41. You've been a guest there as well. And the subject came up about, you know, kind of the disappointments. I brought up the offensive line. And, of course, I was sharing the stage with one Corey Anderson, my nemesis in life, if you will, Adam. No, I'm just kidding. But, Corey, I mentioned the offensive line, and he jumped on me and said, hey, wait a minute, this Browns front may be the best front out there that they're going to face, to get overly critical of the offensive line based on a performance that, one, they won, and two, is maybe the toughest front they're going to face, you know, it may be being overly critical. I think it's a fair point, right? But okay, you give up some sacks or you get beat, and there's, like, it wasn't necessarily a move as much as, like, Orlando Brown does not look quick enough to handle the top edge rushers in football. There's a reason why the Baltimore Ravens, there's a reason why he went in the third round. There's a reason why the Baltimore Ravens played him at right tackle. How much of, listen, I think Orlando Brown can play better, but I don't think he's suddenly going to become a better athlete, something he even mentioned himself he's not the best at.
Yeah, and you know, he's not going to face Myles Garrett every week, so he's not going to always look like that. But you're right. I mean, this is an issue for the Chiefs. They don't like to help their tackles a lot. You know, they like to send five guys out in the pattern a lot. And I don't know if the Chiefs are going to have to change the way they do things, or, you know, something's got to happen here, because you can't have it like that. So, you know, there's he's still kind of getting situated here. So I think there is a little bit of a grace period maybe, but, it doesn't last long. And, you know, this thing's got to get better quickly, because, wasn't very good the other day for sure.
No, there's room for improvement. And I think there is certainly room for chemistry, to evolve. And that's one of the things Seth Kizer talked about, like some of the handoffs on stunts and twists that, you know, maybe they were letting go of one guy too quick, looking to get to the other guy. That chemistry will build. So I definitely think this offensive line will get better. And I do want to, if we're going to talk about, hey, maybe a rough spot, let's talk about a bright spot. Creed Humphrey looked really good. I mean, I think that is a big step. And the rookies, you know, frankly, they didn't grade well on Pro Football Focus, the other two rookies, I should say. But I thought they were at least in the fight, right? It didn't look like the Bucs Super Bowl. This was not what we saw against Tampa. They looked much more competitive. And so I think there's great optimism. But Creed Humphrey looked really good.
Yeah. No, Creed Humphrey has looked good from the day he walked in. I mean, he walked in ready to go and be an NFL player and a high-quality NFL player. I mean, I was really impressed with him at training camp. I know the Chiefs were really impressed with him at training camp, more importantly. And he's done nothing but prove his worth to the Chiefs. So I think good things are coming. Certainly, they're already there for Creed Humphrey, and certainly for Trey Smith. I think those guys are the least of the Chiefs' worries right now. You know, and Joe Tooney will be fine. They need Orlando Brown to make some improvements, though. That's the spot. And Yang, too. I mean, he wasn't very good either. So those are the two spots that have to get better. And you wonder a little bit how patient the Chiefs will be with Lucas Niang. I mean, if he's not a whole lot better than this anytime soon. I mean, they do have last year's starter on the bench, right? Mike Maremmers. How patient are the Chiefs going to be there? I think pretty patient, but maybe not for, you know, weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
But on the left side, they really have no alternative. It's sink or swim with Orlando Brown.
Yeah, and the good news is, like you said, there are alternatives. There is good depth along that offensive line. The other receivers, right, not named Tyreek Hill, not named Travis Kelce, didn't have a big day. Do we pay way too much attention to that? Like, listen, if the money guys are open, you throw the money guys the ball, and everybody needs to just relax whether or not Mecole Hardman has a good day or not. I mean, if Mecole Hardman's having a good day, does it mean that Tyreek Hill's not? And would you rather have that or no? At some point, these guys need to be more dynamic and more of a weapon for the Chiefs to be the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't think this is sustainable to do it the way the Chiefs did it the other day. Hey, if you're telling me that they're going to – Kelce and Hill are going to go 17 for 273 and three TDs every week, yeah, absolutely, this is not a problem, right? But that's not going to happen every week. We saw the Super Bowl. It didn't last year. It didn't happen that way. So, I do feel like somebody's going to have to develop it. It doesn't have to be, say, Mecole Hardman every week or Byron Pringle every week or Clyde Edwards-Helaire every week. But somebody's got to, on a weekly basis, the Chiefs are going to need somebody to kind of become more involved and become more of a factor, because the Chiefs become a more dangerous team. The more that Mecole Hardman, let's say, produces, the more defensive coverage, the more defensive attention he's going to have, he's going to get. And guess what? That's going to help Hill, Kelce, and Mahomes. So, yeah, something has to develop here over the course, maybe as soon as Sunday. But it's going to be hard for the Chiefs to win that way every week.
I will say the O-line factors into that as well, because if you're wanting to get Mecole Hardman on a deep ball, then you got to protect, right? So if the O-line gets better protection, then maybe there's more opportunities for these guys to make plays downfield. And certainly if the O-line plays better, there's more opportunities for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Numbers aren't big, although I thought he was effective in the second half. Andy Reid clearly said, 3 carries for 3 yards is not enough. We've got to not just score points, but we're going to have to maintain possession of the football. And I think pounding away with the run allowed the offensive line to, get back after that D-line, take a little bit out of them by firing out into them, and it helped his defense a lot. So I think it was a great play call on his part of not just getting points, but also recognizing I got to play some defense on offense as well. That being said, we did think this offensive line, the one thing we felt pretty comfortable was they're damn big, that they were going to do a really good job in the run game. How concerned are you that the rushing attack wasn't more productive?
Yeah, that's the part that I think is going to take a little longer for this offensive line to get better at is the run blocking part of it. I mean, they've been working on the pass blocking stuff since May when the offseason workouts started, but you can't really do the run game. You can do some in camp when you can put the pads on. But, there wasn't a whole lot of playing time in the preseason. So, they didn't get a ton of work there. So, I think that's just going to come with repetition. But I expect that to get better over the course of the season. I don't know that part of it is a huge concern. I think it will get better for the Chiefs as the season goes on. And if it doesn't, it's a huge disappointment. And I don't feel like the Chiefs will even come close to maximizing what they have if they can't get better at that.
Yeah, no, it is an aspect of the game, and they're counting on that to be, a better weapon at the goal line, which is something that, all the trick plays and all that, that's great, but every time you run one of those, it's now on tape and gets easier to stop the next time around. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an important equation for them to just be able to bully ball their way in, and I think that's one of the things we expected that this offensive line would do. We're talking to Adam Teicher here in the program from ESPN. Adam, The Tyrann Mathieu situation, he did not play last week. He's going to play this week. Throw him into the mix. Throw Frank Clark into the mix. Eventually Willie Gay into the mix. How much better can this defense be than what it showed last Sunday?
Better be a lot better because the Browns are a good team. I still expected the Chiefs to show a lot better than what they did. Everything that happened on Sunday, that was the pass rush was number one, but just generally defensively, not really getting many stops. I mean, that was that was a real thing, and what really helped the defense against the Browns was that third quarter when the offense was just sort of keeping the ball away. And I think the Browns only had 3 plays, and one of them being the fumble. in the third quarter. I mean, that really helped the Chiefs out and sort of got things turned around. I think they started squaring some things away. But, I how could you feel good about the Chiefs when the Browns got the ball back there at the end? I mean, I imagine every Chiefs fan had to be real nervous because who didn't expect them to go down the field? You know, credit to the Chiefs. They made a play to end the game. But Baker Mayfield can't throw that ball, man. I mean, he's got a with the timeout left and 45 seconds, something like that. He's got to throw that ball into the ground. That's not a big time play. So they got some help too, but it has to be better, and I think it will be a lot better this week. With Tyrann Mathieu back, probably Frank Clark back, and the Ravens. I don't see how they can. They're so beat up at this point. I don't know how they can hang with the Chiefs for 60 minutes.
Yeah, Eric Bieniemy, his name being mentioned at USC, he handled it very well. I'm kind of the opinion this smells like his agent putting his name into the mix, although the odds makers have him as the second favorite to actually get the job, so maybe I'm reading that wrong. And by the way, I have no problem with his agent doing that. That's what agents are supposed to do, and I would love to see him get a head coaching job. I think it's long overdue for Eric Bieniemy, so I'm not at all negative about how this is going on. But number one, do you think he really is a candidate? And do you think if he is and they want to make the hire now, that that'll go, he'll get the blessings of Andy Reid? And you know, it sounded like he would have them, but do you think that's really the case? Or is Andy Reid going to be upset if he tries to leave midseason?
I don't think that's a real good fit for Eric Bieniemy or for USC for that matter, particularly USC. I mean, it would be a weird step for that school to take, to hire a guy who's never been a head coach, who has not coached very much in college. He did back in the day, but it's been a lot of years now since he coached in college. You know, to have him sort of step back into the college game, that would be a weird fit. I can't imagine USC wanting a guy who they're frankly taking a chance on. I mean, they don't know what they're getting here. I mean, they've got to do a James Franklin or somebody who's kind of more of a sure thing, who they know exactly he's getting. And as far as Eric Bieniemy goes, I feel like, hey, he's been patient. I mean, you feel like he should have gotten his opportunity to be an NFL head coach by now. But if that's what he wants to do, I think that's going to happen at some point. So I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, maybe it'll develop down the road, but it's hard for me to see this becoming a real thing on either part. I don't see USC being hugely interested or Bieniemy being interested either. I mean, remember, he wasn't interested in Colorado last year. Now, I know USC is different than Colorado, but he went to school in Colorado. Has a lot of feelings for that place. So if he wasn't interested in Colorado, I can't imagine that he would be interested in USC. But, well, hey, that's not to say he won't.
All right, we're talking to Adam Teicher here in the program from ESPN. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs. If you got an urgent sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has a Saturday morning walk-in clinic, perfect for those high school football bumps and bruises. It's at I-435 and all. Learn more right now, kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Adam, I'll start you with this. Give me your prediction on the game, Chiefs and Ravens. Who wins? What's the score?
I got the Chiefs, 31-19, maybe they only get to 30 if Andy Reid does an inexplicable go for two in the fourth quarter. Then maybe the Chiefs get 30, but I'll take them 31-19.
Patrick Mahomes, yards and touchdowns. What will it be at the end of the 17-game season?
At the end of the season? I'll take him with, he had looked great yesterday or Sunday. I'll say 4,900 yards, and you want touchdowns too? How about 42?
4,900 and 42. I think you're low on both. That's my personal
opinion. You might be right.
Low on both. All right. Tell me, when, give me a date, Tyrann Mathieu is extended.
I'm going to say after the Super Bowl. So sometime in late February, early March. It's going to be a while.
Give me your, just throw a dart. Let's see how close you get.
February. How about March 1st?
3-1. I'm going to call for it in season. It's going to happen. I'm going to go in season. I think I look at $2.6 million of cap space, and I don't think that's enough to get through the year. So to me, the only way they get any money back is to redo Tyrann Mathieu. So I still think maybe something's brewing there. Finally, sack total for Chris Jones. What you got at the end of the year? What's he at?
Give me I said this before the season. I think he's going to be better than his career high, which is 15.5. So give me 16 for Chris Jones.
16 for Chris Jones. We'll take it. Adam, you're always better than your career high with us. We appreciate that greatly. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Good stuff, friend. Talk to you next time.
The program with Soren Petro.
Well, spank my ass and call me Charlie. Isn't this exciting?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer.
Last weekend. It's awesome.
So good.
So good. So good.
Only two Chiefs quarterbacks have lost a game in Baltimore. I asked for either one, and it's a fun duo. Notice I didn't say at
Lenny.
The Ravens. Lenny Dawson in 1975.
I was there when Trent Green beat him. So I don't think it was Trent.
I'll give you a really good hint.
I think I know. Wasn't that part of the great Brody Croyle's 0-7 or 0-9?
I was going to say, what's going on? Yes, 38-24 at Baltimore in the season opener in 2009.
I so wish Brody Croyle got a win, but I am telling you that Brody Croyle's gotten more laughs off telling jokes about not having won a start in the NFL than anyone. Nobody has taken that better, embraced it, and romance. I haven't heard it, but I just know for sure that that is the case.
Yeah.
That was a good dude.
He was a very easy guy to root for. I mean, loss after loss, and every time, that's why we say this, every time I'd call him to hook up, we had a weekly segment with him. What's going on?
Yeah.
Always had that personality.
He's Sorry a good dude. I wish he would have worked out.
Or somewhere. Like, he could have caught on somewhere and won a few
games. He couldn't stay healthy.
No, he could not.
You know what? To his credit, he went, I'm not getting beat to hell. Like, I tried it, but my body doesn't hold up to this stuff. I had a big arm. Could let it rip. But man, I don't think there was any way he was 200 pounds.
No, I don't think he was that.
No. All right, when we come back, we're going to give you the things you need to know. Hey, we got to the bottom of where Mecole Hardman's helmet was and why that was an issue in the game. That should be interesting. You'll like to hear this. That's coming up. Also coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, the great one, Kansas City treasure Kevin Harlan from CBS, TNT, Westwood One. He is the man. He will have the call of the Pats and Jets. Did the Pats and Dolphins. We'll talk a little Pats. A little Mac Jones with him and some Chiefs football coming up next hour.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, Daniel Jones has lost all six of his primetime starts. How many quarterbacks have lost their first seven? Brought to you by Good Sense.